Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Rachel Miro. Lots of high-end jobs available, but little else. Stratospheric housing costs, homelessness, many schools, digital only for the duration of the pandemic. What is not to love about life in California today? Silicon Valley in particular is flying high, but major regional studies warn the region's housing crisis here in the Bay Area is making it less attractive to tech workers, let alone the rest of us. It is not an easy time to be the mayor of one of the state's biggest cities. But San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo ran for the job. So he's here in this half hour to accept our grilling. Mayor Liccardo, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rachel. You just persuade me to resign.
Oh, no. We're in trouble now.
I love this gig.
And you know, I know you do because I have heard you speak as a booster in so many ways. So let's get to it. If you're ready for this, I'll start with the fact that you chair Big City Mayors, a coalition of mayors from California's 13 largest cities. And along with a number of them, you've been pushing for faster school reopening. Is it even worth it at this point in the school year with just a few months left to go?
Well, I think it certainly is worth it for the kids and for many parents who are struggling right now financially and are really left, particularly for our families who are struggling the most. Too many of these parents are left with a terrible choice between having to care for their child or work outside the home to support their family. And anything we can do to help get more kids in school obviously helps those who are most severely impacted, which we're seeing from all the studies. Is that the most severe impacts are against for our poorest students. And so, you know, this is a major social injustice. And I think the Governor Newsom is absolutely right that we've got to follow the science, but we haven't been following the science. The science tells us we can safely reopen, but the politics have not opened our schools. They've opened, you know, bars and marijuana dispensaries and salons, but have left our kids really abandoned in many ways. And, you know, I think there's no question that everyone's working hard in Sacramento. What I've advocated for is if we can't get it done in Sacramento is I think locally, counties and health departments can be working with school districts to prioritize teachers right away, get them vaccinated. Science shows we don't need to do that to do it safely, but certainly if that's the obstacle, let's get it done and focus on our poorest communities where elementary schools need to open most quickly. And, you know, I think there's a path here if folks can work together. But the challenge is, you know, we know the elephant in the room is teachers union has been pushing hard against this. And I know they want more safety and it's important for the teachers to have a strong union. That's a good thing. But our kids don't have a union. And we know who is hurting the most and we've got to advocate for them.
We're talking with San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo this half hour. If you've got a question for him, don't delay. Give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook or email forum@kqed.org. Don has a question about San Jose Water's increased fees.
Hello.
Hi, Don.
Yeah. So, yes, they San Jose is petitioning for a 18.73% increase in their fees, and they have had increased profitability in the last 2 years. They used this profitability to buy Connecticut Water for $1.1 billion. And despite the fact that they have had increased profitability for the last several years, the question is that we should not be subsidizing their acquisition efforts to expand themselves this way using our fees. We need to have a publicly owned utility. Can Mayor Liccardo please comment on that?
Yeah, I appreciate the concern, and precisely that concern is what prompted me to set a public hearing to ask executives from San Jose Water to come before the public and the council so that we can ask very important questions about what justifies those kinds of rate increases. San Jose Water Company is a company that serves many communities down here in the South Bay, including San Jose. We have obvious concerns with a 19% rate hike, plus an additional 4% if you count the wholesale cost increases imposed by Valley Water. And this is a company that has increased rates more than 60% since 2014. So we're all very concerned about that. The issue of a public takeover is a much more complex one that involves use of eminent domain, and it gets very costly and very litigious. And I'm not confident at the end of the day taxpayers feel better off having gone through that battle. I have certainly proposed doing so with regard to electrical utilities, not public ownership, but rather customer ownership, that is forming a nonprofit collective. And I think that's a very viable model in the electrical context, particularly when PG&E was going through its bankruptcy. Unfortunately, that moment has passed and we didn't get the support of the state legislature. So we've got to work within the realm of the possible. And the truth of the matter is the Fifth Amendment imposes some pretty steep costs on public agencies that want to take over private property.
We're talking with San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, and the phones are lighting up. So if you want to be part of the conversation, now is the time to give us a call and join the scrum. I'm sorry, Mayor Liccardo, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. Coming up in just a bit, I want to talk with you, Mayor, about the 501c4 organization you've launched called Solutions San Jose. Among other things, it's advocating to reopen schools. I know this is a contentious topic. So as we head into this break, I'm going to ask you to think, how is Solutions San Jose going to help soften the bitter business versus labor split we see these days in San Jose politics? With that, I'll hit pause and say you're listening to Forum, and I'm Rachel Myra. You're listening to Forum. I'm Rachel Myro, and we're talking with Mayor Sam Liccardo right now about the 501c4 organization you recently launched called Solutions San Jose. So I go back to this question. How is this going to be a solve for the bitter business versus labor split we see in San Jose politics these days?
Well, I don't propose that we can suddenly solve political issues like deep divisiveness. This is a divisive moment, certainly in our nation, and that's reflected in local political discourse in cities throughout California, throughout the country. But what we do want to do is see if we can solve for basic problems that our residents are facing and that too often are overlooked in all the yelling that's happening from perhaps the most powerful forces or the loudest voices in the extremes. And certainly we see a lot of that yelling happening in social media. And we see certainly TV news. Of course, reputable organizations like NPR would never engage in that, I know. But you know, we certainly see the extreme groups that spin up their base through news organizations. And I think a lot of folks are feeling shut out. A lot of folks who maybe live somewhere between the 10-yard lines on the football field who aren't ready to join the Trump insurgency on one end or perhaps to burn down the police station on the other. They actually want to have a civic conversation, a dialogue about how to solve basic challenges. How do we reduce homelessness? How do we improve public safety? You know, these are the kinds of problems that I think are all too often getting overlooked in some of the larger fights. And that's where we want to insert ourselves. We think there's a broad majority of folks who believe there are solutions that are pragmatic, that may be perhaps less ideological. And there's a lot of pent up demand, I think, for dialogue and engagement in those kinds of solutions. And we've already seen a really strong response.
And when you say we, who's we other than Sam and this vast middle majority you're referring to?
Yeah, well, I mean, so far we've had more than 2,500 folks sign up in just about, I think, a week. And so there's clearly a lot of interest. I'm unquestionably spearheading this. I'm going to be out of it soon because, of course, I'll be out of office in 2 years. So this will not be just me. We'll be obviously building a volunteer board as well as having staff and so forth. So this organization is going to get built out over time. I think there's been some interest in the organization ever since, you know, we've weighed in on this issue about schools. And so everybody wants to know, well, who exactly and what? Well, it's getting built now. And what we're seeing is there's an enormous amount of interest and people want to engage. And it's going to be, you know, largely volunteer driven. You know, that's how information is often communicated today, particularly over social media.
Well, let's head back to the phones now. We've got Margaret in Santa Clara on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Thanks for letting me have a question in here. I have a high schooler, and I'm very concerned about the fact that these kids have been out of school for three semesters or going on three semesters. And I would like to know what we are going to do to push back on the unions to get these kids back in school. We keep talking and talking and talking, and yet we're almost done with another semester and kids aren't back. We've had grocery workers working the whole time and we haven't seen super spreader events. And yet they're dealing with tons of people coming in and out that they don't know. We've had all kinds of other businesses open. And I just don't understand why we are allowing the unions to take over our kids' education and tell us when our kids can go back to school. And I can take that response off air.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah, I think that's a frustration that's shared among many parents that I'm hearing from. And the reality is, you know, these decisions are fundamentally made within school districts. We have more than 1,000 in the state of California. In my own city of San Jose, we have 19 school districts that have 19 school boards and 19 superintendents. And so it's difficult for any of us to say from the outside, hey, let's go get this done. We have to do this in a collaborative way. And what I'm encouraging is, look, I've clearly identified, and I'm not shy from the fact that, yes, teachers' unions have been, you know, strongly opposed in many cases to opening without a lot of other things happening. And I'd like to see if we can get past that opposition to just see if we can get local counties to agree. Let's focus on what is the lowest hanging fruit. The safest places to open are elementary schools. That's what all the data shows. Children under 10 are much less likely to be conveyors of COVID. And we know that it's much safer for teachers in that environment. Let's start there and see if we can just vaccinate, you know, 50 schools, say in Santa Clara County, where we could do that with less than 2% of the vaccine allocation for any given week. If we were just working together and we could get those schools open, it seems to me with simple agreements like this, we could move much more aggressively. I know the fights between unions and everybody else are all happening in Sacramento. I'd like to see if we can get past those fights just to get to solutions and get schools open.
Well, the conversation, it seems, is focused on schools. And so we've got another call on this topic. Fatima in San Jose, are you with us?
Yes. Hi. I'm both a parent to a toddler as well as an educator. And I want to push back on the idea that it's teachers' unions that are not wanting schools to reopen. I'm an educator, and I feel unsafe going back into a classroom where we have systems that don't allow for airflow. We have lots of students in one room. We don't have the infrastructure to go out and safely have 30, 40 students in 6 feet distance. so I think it's really unfair to kind of pit teachers against students or teachers against families, because we're actually both, and we have a right to be safe. And until we all are able to access the second dose of the vaccine and any boosters that go along with it for the variants, you know, I think this push to reopen schools isn't right. So thank you for allowing me that comment.
Sure thing, Fatima. Sam, I think we'll move on to some other topics, because I know that there are a lot of people.
Can I just respond very briefly?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think this is really important. You know, Fatima's right. Teachers do have a right to be safe. And it's really important we follow the science here. And what Anthony Fauci has said clearly, and Rochelle Walensky, who's Joe Biden's appointee to the CDC and the California Department of Health, what they're all saying is that schools, particularly elementary schools, can be reopened safely. And we're seeing it throughout the country. We're just not seeing it in California. And so we absolutely need to do it safely, and we can. And I've even proposed, look, we can accelerate vaccinations if that's what we need to do, but we got to work together to get there.
So the next big question I have for you has to do with homelessness. Tell me what San Jose has been up to during the pandemic to help the unhoused, especially downtown.
Well, thanks. You know, we've got a lot of work happening with the county, nonprofits, moving more than 3,000 people into shelter, more than 1,600 unhoused residents into permanent housing. All that we know is really in person. This is just during the pandemic, so you know, this is a lot of work being done while people are trying to also address the pandemic issues. But what we know is none of it is enough, given the scale of the challenge we have. Just here in Santa Clara County, about 10,000 unhoused residents, more than 30,000 throughout the Bay Area. And nobody's going to go out there and build housing to make a profit. We know that because homeless individuals cannot pay. And so this is overwhelmingly on the public sector. And it costs about $700,000 per apartment to build affordable housing anywhere in the Bay Area these days, at least in the South Bay and San Francisco. And it also takes 4 or 5 years. So we know that's not a solution that we can scale to attack the magnitude of this problem. It would be a $7 billion task just in our county alone. So we've got to bend the cost curve, and we have to find ways to do it more quickly. And what we've discovered during this pandemic is, you know, with the governor's help in getting CEQA waivers in place with some state funding and our emergency declaration, which has moved a lot of red tape out of the way, we can move very quickly with prefabricated modular housing on public land. Some of it we've leased from Caltrans in one site, two sites where we're building on city land. We've got a 4 site underway. And we're seeing real interest in philanthropy now, because what they're seeing is a model that's enabling us to build rapidly in 4 months rather than in 4 years. And we're building housing at maybe $90,000 or $100,000, $110,000 per unit, rather than at $700,000 per unit. And these are safe, dignified housing units. These are apartments, really dorm housing with bathrooms and so forth. And we're looking to see if we can scale this model. We've already built out on 3 sites, more than 300 unhoused individuals have moved in, a lot of families, by the way, as well. We've now got a 4th site. We've got a lot of philanthropic interest. One philanthropist came in at $5 million to help us build this out. I'm very grateful to Peter Powell and Susanna Powell for that. And I think there's a lot of interest because we're on to something that can really scale and tackle this problem. And so I want to continue to push on this and keep the accelerator down.
You've been channeling former Governor Jerry Brown lately with your push to streamline CEQA, or we should really say the California Environmental Quality Act, to accelerate production of affordable housing and also transit. How critical is SB 7 in Sacramento for San Jose's downtown west, the big development project you've been cooking up with Google?
Yeah, certainly it's very important for us, for the more than 4,000 housing units. By the way, a quarter of those are going to be rent restricted and affordable. So the 4,000 housing units, that 7 million square feet, all the 15 acres of parks, all the things that are going to get built in this project, which is tremendous, obviously, for any city. But, you know, it points to a larger need. I mean, we're pushing like heck on this bill because this exemption's been in place for 5 years, and now we want to extend it. And I'm grateful to Senator Pro Temp Toni Atkins for her leadership on this. But the reality is we shouldn't have to keep pushing on these kinds of exemptions when the reality is projects like this are the most environmentally sensitive we possibly could build. You know, we're building all this density right around the largest transit station in the region. And we're doing it in a way, Google's committed, they're going to do it with zero net emissions. There's going to be enormous amount of infrastructure, including a microgrid that's going to really set a new standard for environmental sustainability. But we need to go through all these hoops. And I think any environmentalist would say, let's just promote the development that's good rather than creating years of CEQA litigation that can hold this up. And so we need to get beyond sort of the Swiss cheese approach of creating exemptions, and we need to rewrite the law in a way that enables environmentally friendly, affordable housing, infill housing to move forward, particularly where it's transit oriented. And rather than sort of the, you know, 15 or 20 exemptions that are on the books where nobody really knows when they expire, whether they're going to apply to my project or not, it's impairing our ability to really move forward.
This is Forum. I'm Rachel Miro. We're talking with San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, and no conversation about San Jose would be complete without a check-in about the police department. Aside from the newest proposed housing option for homeless people in the PD's overflow parking lot, you've got four finalists, am I right, looking to replace the police chief? Anything you can tell us about them?
I'm not authorized to say anything other than to say we got four great candidates. We've got a department that is rebuilding and doing a tremendous job with not nearly enough police officers. In fact, we have the smallest force of any major city in the country per capita. So whoever's going to take this role is just going to need to figure out how we can continue to do more with less. And, you know, I'm grateful we've got good candidates ready to lead.
Well, I'll just say there are three internal commanders and one external prospect from Pittsburgh. And I'm pretty sure I heard a news report the other day pointing out that it has been many, many decades since San Jose PD had an external candidate actually land the police chief job. Any thoughts on that?
Well, in some ways, it's testament to the fact that we've had a department that is really in many ways set a standard. You know, any given time, typically there are 10 or 15 police chiefs throughout the Bay Area that used to be San Jose police officers. We believe we groom the chiefs, and we tend to pick our own because of that understandable belief that we've got a certain set of standards, particularly around accountability, you know, a real focus on de-escalation, on data and accountability with regard to racial bias and a whole host of issues that we have seen really explode over the last 2 years. And we've got a lot more work to do in those areas. So we're not going to reduce our standards in any way when we hire a chief. I would say, I think there's no question, there's been a lot of criticism of the department lately. And so it encourages us to be looking nationwide for the best and brightest talent that we can bring here. And so, you know, we've been open to that, and we'll find out through the interviews and the process who rises to the top.
Well, let's grab another phone call. We've got Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm curious if, given that folks are now working more remotely or from home, and that's likely that many of them will continue to do so even after the pandemic, if there's been any thought put towards utilizing existing parking structures in terms of establishing housing, infill housing, and transforming those parking structures into some type of housing. Thank you.
Karen, really appreciate the question. Absolutely. I think there is going to be a lot of rethinking of cities and how we're built over the next several years as a result of the pandemic and all the changes that have resulted. I would say this, though. I would not discount the fact that what existed before with regard to the need for people to be at work is, I believe, that's still going to be a important element for a lot of creative industries and industries that really rely on innovation and rely on smart people who are in the same space, having those creative collisions, whether they're at the water cooler or in the break room or anywhere else. I am hearing time and again from employers about the concern of the loss of human interaction and what that does to their ability to innovate and to have conversations across the silos within their organizations. So look, Zoom's been great. We know it's the best alternative given the situation, but I think you're gonna see more employers than you might expect go back to a model, at least here in Silicon Valley, where for a significant amount of time every week, they're gonna expect people to be in the same space. I know there've been lots of announcements to the contrary. I'm still bullish on workspace. I think there's value to it.
Real quick question before we head out from Petra. What are we doing about the Guadalupe Gardens encampment?
Yeah, you know, we've got a real challenge there because the more than 200 unhoused residents who are there, who have been there for some time, and I was out there just a couple weeks ago, and we were distributing food and discussing some of the challenges with regard to access to water and so forth. They're in an airport approach area, and the FAA is pretty clear about where people can be and where they can't be when planes are landing and taking off. And so at some point, I expect the feds will tell us, as they have told us in the past, as recently as a year and a half ago, that we're going to have to move residents. And obviously I want to move them somewhere. So we're building a development project right now that would hopefully house about 90 of those residents just on the other side of the freeway. And we've got to obviously build a lot more affordable housing.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo this half hour. Clearly, we could fill a couple of hours just talking to you. You have been listening to Forum. Continue the conversation online at kqed.org/forum. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Rachel Miro.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.